So we're going to begin. We are continuing in Perek Yud Ches, chapter 18 of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, and we're up to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21. And what had happened was is that we already saw Shaul is beginning to really feel a hatred towards David, and there was one attempt. Again, it's a challenging words for us to read in the Navi. But that Shaul attempted to take David's life. And unfortunately, we're going to see that again. And specifically right now, we're up to a part in the story where Shaul came up with a basic plan to have David marry one of his daughters. Because if one of his daughters is married to him, so then he feels that, you know, Shaul will be able to kind of trap David, or at least encourage David to get to the battlefield. And hopefully, with David being on the battlefield, the other enemies, namely the Plishtim, would take David out. So we're continuing Pasuk Chaf Aleph right after a very strange pasuk said that Shaul really wanted his older daughter Meirav, but she became married to someone else, a man named Adriel, and so he realized he could have his other daughter, his younger daughter, Michal, marry David, and that seemed like a good idea. So Pasuk Chaf Aleph is continuing in that this part of the story. Vayomer Shaul, so Shaul said, perhaps this is saying to himself, Etnena lo usihi lo lamokesh. I'll give her, the previous Pasuk had mentioned how Michal had an affinity towards David, so I'll give her, meaning Michal, to David, and she'll be lamokesh, she'll be for him, like to entrap him. She'll be for him, because she'll have her allegiance will lie with me, her father, and therefore, usihi bo yad plishtim. The hand of the plishtim will be against him, as the commentators explain. She'll keep encouraging him to play a role in the armed forces, and hopefully the plishtim will get the better of David. Now that even in and of itself might not be a rational way to think, because clearly it's clear that Hashem is on the side of David. If David was able to take out Goliath, would kind of the minor soldiers of the Plishtim be a problem for David? So you could make the argument, much like the rest of the story, that Shaul is no longer thinking rationally, and so while this, you know, sounds like a plan, when you start thinking about the plan, it doesn't necessarily hold up. Vayomer Shaul el David, so Shaul said to David, and we're in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, we're on page 122 for you. Vayomer Shaul el David, Shaul said directly to David, Bishtayim tischatein bi hayom. With two, or really, really with one of two, meaning with one of my two daughters, you should become my son-in-law. Tis chatein. You should be my chatan. You should be my son-in-law today. Meaning, I'm serious about my offer. The Mefarshim point out that David was a little, besides being skeptical, or not necessarily skeptical, besides David saying in the previous couple of psukim, who am I? Who's my family? How do I deserve to be in the king's family? But seeing how Meirav, the older daughter, was supposed to go to him, and then that kind of got pulled out, David was a little unsure, and so Shaul kind of put it out there and said to him specifically that this is the plan. You'll marry one of my two daughters, and it can happen soon. Pasuk Chaf Beis, Vayitzav Shaul es Avadav. Shaul then commanded his servants, Dabur el David, to continue the conversation with David, balat, but in private or in secret, lemor saying, Hinei chafetz b'cha hamelech, the melech really wants you, v'chol avadav ahivucha, all of his servants love you, v'ata ischatein b'melech, and now you should really consider and take advantage of this opportunity to become a son-in-law to the king. And the fact that first Shaul said it to David, and now he's sending his servants, so it seems that David is being reluctant. Now we had noted before one of his his expression of being reluctant was David says, "Who am I? Who is my family?" And almost highlighting the both the stature and also perhaps the economic difference between someone simple like David and the family of the king. However, we also pointed out a question that we already know that David, because he was one who killed Goliath, one of the quote-unquote rewards for the one who had killed Goliath would be to have the queen, the princess's hand in marriage. So how do we work the two? So I think we're going to come to an answer, and we'll see it just in a moment or two. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Vayidabru avdei Shaul ba'oznei David. So the servants of Shaul spoke into the ear of David es advar me'ila, these words. Vayomer David, and David responded, Hanikala be'einechem hischatein v'melech. Is it so light in your eyes, the topic of becoming a son-in-law to the king? V'anochi ish rash v'nikle. I am, the word rash, the Metzilus Tion tells us, is ani. I am poor. It says, I am a man who is poor. V'nikle. Nikle means lowly. The Metzilus Tion says, the opposite of mechubad, the opposite of honored. So David is almost turning to them as, you are disgracing the title of son-in-law to the king by telling me I could be a son-in-law to the king. Do you not, you know, he's rejecting it by saying, do you not know what it means to be the son-in-law to the king? To be the son-in-law to the king means, but this is how he thinks about himself. This is how he views himself. And here, specifically, with the phrase rash, he highlights the fact that he is poor. Now, that might not be, it might not be poor to the masses, but relative to the king, it doesn't seem to be, he doesn't seem to be on the proper economic status. For which we might see, I believe, a clear reason why he was hesitant. Pasuk of Da'alad. Vayagidu avdei Shaul lo lemor kadvarim ha'ela diber David. So now the servants of Shaul came back to Shaul, and they said exactly what David had said. Pasuk of Hey. Vayomer Shaul. Shaul said, and this presumably is what Shaul wants to be. This is what, right? Vayomer Shaul, Kosam Ru LeDavid. You're going to go back to David. I'm not going to tell him this idea of the plan. This is what you're going to tell him. Ein chafetz lamelach b'mohar. Ki b'mea arlos plishtim. Lina came ba'oyve ha'melach. A mohar is a dowry, a type of payment that in certain, it sounds like the, at least at this time in history, the groom's side and the groom himself would have to provide some type of dowry for the wedding. Now, in other times in history, it was the burden of providing the dowry was on the bride's side of the wedding. In our studies in school, in Maseches Kiddushin, it's a fascinating comment that Tosos makes. We're talking about the age that a girl should get married and whether or not her father could marry her off. And Tosos just interjects. He says, V'achshav, and nowadays he's talking about the 1100s, 1200s in Crusader time in France and Germany. He says, nowadays, their fathers marry off their daughters quite young because if a father happens to come into money at a certain point, if he doesn't marry off his daughter now, there might not be money in the future. Not because an investment is going to go bad, because there might be another crusade, there might be another pogrom, and if he waits until a maybe more age-appropriate time to get married, there won't be any money, and he won't be able to marry off, and Tosa says she'll remain single forever. Throws out that type of phrase. So clearly in that time, and I think it was more likely, that the bride side had to provide the dowry. What Shaul seems to be expressing here is you'll tell David, Ein chafetz lamelech b'mohar, I don't want a dowry that's financial. Which is maybe David's concern. What am I bringing to the table to marry the daughter of the king? I don't have any finances. So Shaul says, I have a different type of dowry I'm looking for. You know, we'll be explicit because the verse is explicit. the dowry he wants for his daughter's hand in marriage. So he wants 100 foreskins of plishtim. Meaning he wants you to kill 100 plishtim, and to prove that you killed them, cut off their foreskins and bring them and present them to me. Linakein ba'oyvei ha-melech, because that will be taking a revenge against the enemies of the king, and I'll accept that as a dowry. And that anyone can step up to the table. And David, clearly David, who's the warrior who fought against Goliath, that's something that he could handle. Now, why did he do that? He's demanding that David basically kill 100 soldiers on the enemy side. Vishal Chashav, Shal thought, La'apil es David biad plishtim, to have David receive his downfall, to cause him la'apil, to cause David to fall, meaning to be killed, biad plishtim, on his mission to kill 100 soldiers, David would get caught up in the fighting, David would be killed, he'd never actually have to go ahead and marry off his daughter, and he'd be done with the David problem all taken care of in what we would call a shev v'al ta'aseh, a passive, a sitting and without doing type of manner, meaning he's sending him to the front lines, but he's not going to, his hands will actually be clean from the killing.
Is there an ongoing war? I mean, I know they just fought, but is there like an, like, is he going into a already pre-done battle, or is he just going to kill soldiers with no one behind him kind of thing? Is
so whether or not David would have someone with him, I would actually, I don't think we're going to see it from the psukim, but you would imagine that he does, because we keep hearing about how David is a successful in battle, and he's successful in the eyes of his fellow soldiers. And so if David was on a mission and he turned to his fellow soldiers and said, you know, I'm on a mission from the king to go and ambush 100 soldiers, he wouldn't be alone. In terms of, it does seem like it's a constant state of war. It does seem like it's the Plishti problem has not been completely dealt with at this point in history.
It's not starting a war by going to kill soldiers. You know, it's
correct. Not there's like actually, nowadays, I mean, I'll mention it now due to your question, but there's a commentary that puts forward the following theory why when the Plishtim heard that David was going to be, this is even after, when the Plishtim heard that David got married, so the Plishtim, which is going to be in the last couple of psukim in the parak, is going to say that he got married. He does get married to Michal, and he's going to again fight the Plishtim. And this commentator notes that the Plishtim were, they calculated that David wouldn't be part of the army at that time. They knew the laws of the Torah. The laws of the Torah state that during a first year of marriage, you're not supposed to go out into battle. You're supposed to stay home and not take part in wars. This commentary notes that the Plishtim, while they knew the Torah, they didn't know all the Torah. There are different types of wars. There's a war that's called a Melchemes Rishus and Melchemes Mitzvah. Melchemes Rishus is an optional war. That's the type of war that someone who gets married, and there are other quote-unquote excuses why a person wouldn't necessarily need to fight. When it comes to a Melchemes Mitzvah, an obligatory war, so Melchemes Mitzvah, it's all hands on deck. Melchemes Mitzvah, there are no excuses for that. When Yoshua and the Bnei Yisrael came into the land of Israel, they began a Melchemes Mitzvah of conquering the land of Israel. And Yoshua, while he was successful, it was not with 100% success rate. The Plishtim were a spillover of continuing, meaning those battles and all the time of Sefer Shoftim, it's over 300 year period, but all of Sefer Shoftim, and now it's still a carryover of the original Melchemes Mitzvah, and therefore David, even though he was married, he was obligated to go. But I think why I'm bringing it out now is because it highlights the fact there was a constant state of war, even if there wasn't constant war. But there were always soldiers pretty much on both sides kind of ready to go for battle.
Still a constant state of war.
Right. So we hope to change. So this is Shaul's idea, that the dowry won't be financial, and that will alleviate one of David's major concerns. Pasuk Chavav, So his servants, Shaul's servants, told David these words. And this was good. This was good in the eyes of David. To become the son-in-law of the king. And the days had not been full yet. Apparently there was some type of time period that David had to take care of this mission. And so the time was still going. Now, why is it Vayishar HaDavar Be'enei David? Why was this? Why did David think this was a good idea? Or that this is, meaning, once you take away the financial need to pay for the dowry, so now he can handle it. But he's now willing to accept the idea that he's going to marry, or at least try to marry, the daughter of a king. So this is pure theory. We know that David's already been anointed by Shmuel, and he hasn't been given instructions to become king about what he does now that he's been anointed as a future king. But if you want to learn how to be a king, what better way, perhaps, than to become the son-in-law to the current king? You don't know when you're taking over, but this will allow you even more, right? He already had that position of being an attendant and kind of playing the music for the king. But you only play the music for the king when you're needed. When you're the son-in-law of the king, happens to be that there are times that leaders in the free world choose their son-in-laws as advisors, as people who could either help them, right? So either it's helpful to the one who's leading the country, or it could be helpful to the son-in-law, especially a son-in-law like David, who he didn't grow up with his life of having aspirations of being king, but he's been told by the Navi that Hashem wants him to be king. David's going to unfortunately learn very quickly that this was not a good decision. Spending more time in the palace and solidifying his place in the palace was not a good decision, and it wasn't a safe decision. As a flip side, because again, I said that was pure theory, David might be out of excuses. Right, when someone knocks on your door and says, you know, I'd like for you to marry my daughter, so if you think it's a good idea, you can go out with her, and if you don't think it's a good idea, you say thank you very much. When you're an attendant in the palace and the king says it's a good idea for you to marry my daughter, it's really hard to say no. You maybe even can't. So what can you do? You can try to come up with as many excuses as you can. So if you formulated this main excuse, how you don't have the money, not a problem. That's not an excuse, because you don't need to provide money. So when it says Vayishar HaDavar, the matter was very straight in David's eyes. L'hischatein b'melech, to become the son-in-law of the king. We're going to highlight this again. When you go to a wedding, and you see a chassan and a kala, a bride and a groom, if the chassan is walking around the wedding talking about how I'm becoming the son-in-law of so-and-so, I'm becoming the son-in-law of so-and-so, it's a little fishy, right? You're not supposed to become the son-in-law of so-and-so. You're supposed to become the husband of so-and-so. And maybe there's a nice bonus if the father-in-law is something. But Vayishar HaDavar Beni David L'schatein B'melech, meaning David, it was a good idea, or this matter was yasher, straight in his eyes, to become the son-in-law of the king. There's no way out. He has to become the son-in-law of the king now. And so he goes through, and we'll circle back to that idea, because it keeps being mentioned about son-in-law to the king, son-in-law to the king. V'lo malu hayamim, the pasuk concluded that the days had not been filled. Pasuk of Zion. Vayakom David, David got up. Vayelechu va'anashav. So here, pasuk expresses that he did not go alone. He went with his men. How big was his force, we don't know. Vayach ba'plishtim, and he struck against the plishtim, masayim ish, 200 men. I don't know if that's supposed to be more romantic, that he was only asked to provide 100, and instead he went out and got 200, and got all their foreskins. Vayave David es arlo sehem, David brought their foreskins, Vayimalum Lamelach, he brought them to the king, and he filled what the king desired, l'schati memelch, to become the son of the king, and the king was good on his word. Vayitain lo Shaul es Michal b'tolisha. Shaul gave over his daughter Michal to David for a wife, and that was the. I imagine they went through this dowry was kind of a preparatory step to the marriage. Again, in yeshiva this year we learned Maseches Kiddushin, so my head is very focused on marriage. So we know that when a man marries a woman, he's supposed to give her something of value. I don't think this was the something of value. This was the preparatory step. This was the way for the king to give his. To give his royal blessing, vayitain shal lo shal as Michal b'tol isha, and now shal allowed for the marriage to happen, and then the marriage happened. Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, pasuk chafches. Vayar shal saw, vayeda, and he knew, ki Hashem im David. He saw that God is constantly with David. Umichal bas Shaul ahei vasu, and Michal, the daughter of Shaul, loved him. Him meaning David. And so Shaul's beginning to see in the infancy of this marriage that Michal might not prove to be the best daughter for this job. That she her allegiance, even though the pasuk keeps defining her as Michal bas Shaul. She's Michal bas Shaul, and in Shaul's mind, she's supposed to remain Michal bas Shaul, right? The pasuk says in Bereishis that when a man gets married, Al kein yazov ish es aviv es imo, that the man will forget or forsake his parents and be close to his wife. Shaul wanted that Michal would not forget him. Shaul wanted that Michal would keep her allegiance to her father. But the pasuk testifies, and the pasuk testifies that Shaul is picking up on. He's seeing and he's becoming aware. It's vayera, vayar, and vayeda. He's becoming aware that Michal, his daughter, ahevas hu, loves David, and Shaul's hope for Michal being the one who will be able to help him with his plots against David, that seems to be evaporating in front of him. Pasuk chavtes. Vayesov Shaul leiro mipnei David od. Shaul continued to fear David even more. Vayhi Shaul oyev es David kol hayamim. And Shaul would treat David as an oyev, as an enemy. Would hate or be hateful feelings towards David kol hayamim for all days. Why? There is no rational reason for Shaul to be afraid of David. He is and he isn't. Meaning there is no one, there's no one in the country that knows that David is the next king. And there's no one in the country that really knows that Shaul is not going to be king. Shaul is creating this image and he's creating a reality in his mind where David is a threat. And David, he's afraid of David. David is innocent. All David keeps doing is exactly what Shaul wants him to do. Shaul wants him to fight against this, he'll fight against that. Shaul wants him to fight this, he'll fight that. Shaul wants him to marry his daughter, he'll marry his daughter. David, on paper, David is doing everything in his possible power to just be good and do what's right. Yet Shaul and perhaps again, a lot of this is just is kind of simple thought. Vayesof Shaul, it's adding. When you have a fear, so your fear sometimes builds on your fear, and it just keeps getting bigger, even though it's based on nothing. It's based on an original fear. But now you kind of even forgot that, and it grows and grows and grows. Pasuk Lamed. Vayetzu Sari Plishtim. And when the officers of the Plishtim would go out, vayihi midei tzeisam, whenever they would go out, sachal David mikol avdei Shaul. David was most successful from all the other servants of Shaul, meaning in his military campaigns against the Plishtim. Vayikar shemo ma'od, yikar, from the language, as the Mitzvah Sion says, from yakar, precious. David's name his reputation, as we would say, grew and grew amongst the masses of Jews, amongst the masses of people. David's reputation is growing. Now, as a, you know, I don't know officially, the monarchy was quite new. So when you're when you marry the princess, that doesn't that I guess in some cultures that makes you a prince, and some cultures it doesn't make you a prince. I don't know what when the Queen of England, her husband is Prince Philip. When he married her to become Prince Philip, or when she became queen, did he become Prince Philip? That's a Shiloh. Nobody, there are rules. There are rules. Your name changes constantly, and titles. But whether or not David was an official prince now, because he's married to the princess, or just as a soldier, his name, his reputation as a successful soldier is growing. The Plishtim are clearly not killing him, and Shaul's plans are going miserably. The Rav Bazak notes the following similarity between this story and a different story in Tanakh, which on the surface level, it's not out of all the comparisons that I've shared with you, I think this is the most unpleasant, and I'll be very frank why it's unpleasant, because we're going to match up the story to a different story, and the character of Shaul gets matched up with you know, like one of the evil characters in the Torah, and that it doesn't sit well, because while Shaul was clearly going through something, he was not evil, and he was not a Rasha. He was for a good part of his life, he was righteous. He was the one person chosen from the entire people to be the king. God clearly saw something in him that was there. Unfortunately, he made certain decisions, and he was held accountable for those decisions. But you know, we still name people Shaul. And when I draw you the comparison, you're going to see we don't name that other person. So that part of the comparison is disturbing to me. But there's so many similarities that it's hard to ignore. And that is the story of David with Michal and Shaul. So David as the husband, Michal as the wife, and Shaul as the father-in-law seems to be very similar to the story of Yaakov, Rachel, and Lavan. So comparing David and Yaakov, that's like a win. Comparing Rachel and Michal, okay, maybe we all kind of tip our caps towards Rachel more. She's one of the Imenus, and we'll see some of the things that Michal's attitude is not as positive. But the worst is obviously comparing Shaul with Lavan. That doesn't sit well. But the stories seem to match up in a great way. And again, if it just had one of these similarities, you'd say, okay, when it builds, it seems to be at least, it's telling us to think. I think the Torah is telling us, think about this. How, what you do with it, that could be, we could maybe go in a different direction. But in both stories, the father-in-law first said you would marry the older daughter, and then you end up marrying, you know, you're going to marry one daughter, and then he says, no, you have to marry a different daughter, right? That's obviously in the Yaakov story. Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel, he ends up marrying Leah. Here, there's originally marrying Merav and then marrying Michal. In both cases, when the original amount of dowry that the man had to provide, it ends up being, first of all, there is a dowry that the man has to provide, and secondly, that amount ends up being doubled, right? Yaakov originally said he'd work for Rachel for 7 years, and then because of the whole mix-up with the marriages, he has to end up working for 14 years. David was supposed to provide 100 of the foreskins, and he ends up providing 200 of the foreskins. Both of these stories in Tanakh use the phrase, or similar phrase of that the days were filled. V'lo malu yamim, that phrase is used in both, or a similar phrase is used in both. There's a rift between son-in-law and father-in-law, to the extent that father-in-law begins chasing son-in-law. Lavan chased. Just the phrase in Pasuk Chavav. the lo malu hayamim. That phrase is similar in both stories. Days are filled.
Oh, that's it.
So in both stories, there's the father-in-law runs after the son-in-law, right? The son-in-law has to run away from the father-in-law. The father-in-law continues chasing. We know that in the Yaakov and Lavan story. We're going to see that extensively in the coming weeks and months in Sefer Shmuel, that David's on the run and Shaul is going to be chasing him. In both stories, Hashem is asked to be the judge between the two. That Yaakov mentions how God will, Hashem will be the judge between him and Lavan, and David mentions to Shaul that God will be the judge between me and you. With all of these similarities, so there's a main difference. And the main, and sometimes that happens, sometimes we point out that two stories are similar to highlight the difference. The difference is that in the Rachel and Yaakov story, we constantly hear how Yaakov loved Rachel. Yaakov loved Rachel, Yaakov loved Rachel, Yaakov loved Rachel. And in this story, it's the exact opposite. We never hear that David loved Michal. We only hear, first of all, we only hear about his relationship to the marriage is that it's all about becoming the son-in-law to the king. Three times it mentions how he's going to become the son-in-law to the king. The prospect is becoming the son-in-law to the king. And then we keep hearing how much Michal loved David. Even before the marriage, we saw that, where the pasuk said, "Vatehav Michal ba'Shaul es David." And now after the marriage, what Shaul witnesses, Michal ba'Shaul ahev asu, and we'll continue to see that. When we're finished with, and when we look back at David and his relationships with his, as we'll see, while this is his first wife, there are going to be numerous wives. It would appear that this relationship with Michal was never going to succeed. It was never going to be a positive marriage type of relationship, and a lot of it had to do with the imbalance. The imbalance that of, again, David accepting the marriage to become the son-in-law, Michal almost being like infatuated with David, and it not being the reverse. And we're going to see both a little bit in Shmuel Aleph, but also a specific story in Shmuel Beis that kind of continues to highlight that. So I thought that was interesting. Again, if all you want to do is think about the comparisons and go with a different direction, you're clearly welcome to do so. With so many numerous comparisons, it's interesting to note. And where you take it, again, could be a different direction. So let's continue our studies by going to Perek Yud Tes, chapter 19. And we have some, if you don't have the Perek, it's on the way. So Perek Yud Tes is the marriage has taken place. Presumably, David. Well, we already know that he kind of lives in the palace, but now he has a real. He's moved from wherever the attendants would sleep. Now he's where the princess would sleep. He's in the royal bedrooms. Pasuk Aleph in Perek Yud Tes. Vayidaber Shaul El Yonasan Beno the El Kol Avadov. Lahamis es David. Shaul was talking to Yonatan, his son, and all of his servants, excluding David. Lahamis es David. He was talking about the topic to kill David. How? Right. And yeah, you have to try to put yourself in the room, because how in the world did everyone else take that? Yes. How is everyone in the room supposed to take that? I mean, we all know that there are some father-in-laws that don't like their son-in-laws. Definitely the beginning of the relationship, but this is a little much. There's no pushback from the servants, but the pasuk tells us, right, if this is the first half of the pasuk, that Shaul was talking over the idea about killing David. So the pasuk then says, "V'yahonasan ben Shaul chafetz v'David ma'od." But Yonatan really liked David. Yonatan did not want... Yonatan's now his brother-in-law. He did not appreciate what was being said about David. Now, how could the other servants justify the king wanting to kill David? I don't necessarily have the answer. What arguments was Shaul making? Meaning, it sounds like Vayidaber Shaul, he's talking. David must have done some type of crime, or David, there must be some reason that he's expressing why he wants to kill David. And maybe it's just his conspiracy theory that's growing in his mind, that David's going to want, now that he's married to my daughter, David's going to want to overthrow the government. He's going to want to take my position. He's going to have me assassinated. And something along those lines.
Do they almost know that Shell is a little... unhinged, or you know.
Well, we don't. What? Well, we.
I mean, they needed like to bring David in originally.
They know, right?
Music. They know that he's got a rational or a low up side.
Some type of condition.
Yeah, when does this music there's something. Stuff come in? Before, during, or after? Or his music?
All of the above.
Oh, so he is the soother, in other words.
That is one of his positions. Although now he's
one
not.
Of his.
He, David is now wearing many hats because now he's constantly sent out on military missions, which didn't happen before. But there's no discussion in terms of what the servants of Shaul / his advisors what they thought about it. But Yonatan clearly wanted to take action because he liked David. Pasuk Beis, Vayagid Yohonasan leDavid leMor. So David told, Yonasan told David as follows. Mevakesh Shaul Avi Lamisecha. By the way, Dave, my dad, Shaul, he's trying to kill you. And that it very well could be that this is the first time that David actually hears those words. Because remember, all the plans, right, in last parak, when Shaul tried to hit David with a spear... So while you think it's shocking, their Mefarshim point out that David was not aware of it. When he marries off his daughter to David because he thinks that that's going to make him go into battle and lose, and he keeps sending him into battle, he's going to get killed. Those are pretty rash. For David, David can always chalk that up with, that's what the king wanted, and I'm successful in battle, and it's going great. This is the first time that David hears, whoa. And it almost could be out of, totally out of nowhere. So Yonatan tells him, my father wants to kill you. V'ata hishamer na baboker, you should be careful this morning. V'yoshafta b'seiser v'nach besa, you should remain here in hiding, right? In hiddenness, in a secret place, and you're going to hide. Pasuk Gimel, Vani etse, I will go out, v'amadati liyad avi. I'm going to stand next to my father, basada, in the field, asher atasham. The field that you're hiding in, I'm going to bring my father. So presumably he's in some type of royal garden near the palace. And Yonatan says, you hide here, I'm going to bring my father. Vani adaber b'chal avi, I'm going to talk about my father. I'm going to talk about you to my father. V'ra'isi ma, v'igarati lach. And I'll see what happens, and I'll tell you. Mefarshim point out, initially, what he wants is that David will hear it himself. He wants David to overhear the conversation. That's the v'ra'iti ma. V'igarti lach is if, for whatever reason, David can't overhear it, if they can't get close enough, or if it's not loud enough. So, in the end, David is definitely going to know what transpires in the conversation. But the original plan is that David could overhear the conversation himself, and either one of two things, either hear from Shaul himself that right, because there may very well be an element of disbelief, right? Put yourself, right? This is something that we always try to point out, that we know everything because we're reading the book. David doesn't have the book in front of him. He doesn't know everything. He didn't. Up until now, he doesn't know that Shaul wants. What would you think if your brother-in-law came over and told you that your father-in-law wants to kill you? It's pretty much. Hopefully, it's out of left field. It's so. The best way for if it's going to be true, and David is going to have to spend, which it does. David's going to have to spend the next good number of months on the run for his life. So the best way for him to internalize that is to hear it himself. And that's clearly, Yonatan orchestrates this plan to ideally have David hear himself. And on the flip side, if Yonatan is able to convince Shaul not to kill David and to get this idea, and it's just some crazy idea that came in, and get it away, so how much more comforting is it for David to hear that himself, that the coast is clear, than to hear it even through just Yonatan's message? Pasuk Dalet. Vayidaber Yonatan b'David tov el Shaul aviv. So the scene is set. David's in hiding somewhere in the field, and now Yonatan is in the field, and he's talking good. He's talking favorably, well, about David to Shaul, his father. Vayomer elav, and Yonatan said to him, meaning and he said to him, which is Yonatan to the king, Al yechata hamelech ba'avdo b'David. The king should not sin against his servant David. Ki lo chatalach, because David didn't sin to you. V'chi ma'asav tovlach ma'od. All of his actions are good for you. So first of all, this pasuk is being said with an extreme amount of respect, right? This is a son talking to his father. And obviously a son talking to his father is always supposed to have respect. But it's not just any son, it's not just any father. It's a son who's talking to the king. And so he still refers to his own father in third person. He refers to him as Hamelech. And then he gives David the title of Eved. He says that David is one of your Avadim. And David, now, you shouldn't sin against David because David didn't sin against you. Which is almost, it's almost accepting the idea that you're right. You're right, Melech. You're right, Father Shaul. If David had done something against you, you would be totally in the right to do something wrong against him and kill him. Halachically, we know that would be right, right? We've pointed this out many times, that you're more, if you rebel against the king, you're chayv misa. But here, Yonatan is making the case, you shouldn't sin against him. He didn't sin against you. Not only did he not sin against you, everything he does is good for you. He's on your side. Pasuk hey. Vayasem es nafsho v'chapo, he placed, this is in reference to David, he placed his own life in his hand. Vayachas a plishti, and he struck the plishti, he killed Goliath. Vayas Hashem tshuva gedola l'chol Yisrael, and Hashem made a great salvation for the Jewish people. Ra'isa, right, you saw it. Batismach, and you rejoiced about it. V'lama sechta bedam naki. Why would you sin against innocent blood, lahamis es David chinam, to kill David for no reason? Again, echoing that if David, right, the inverse, if David was not naki, if he was guilty, and he was not chinam, then it would be fine. But right now, David has done nothing, and you want to go ahead and kill him. It makes no sense. Now, what's clear about Shaul, as you'll see from the next pasuk, is that Shaul had moments of clarity and moments of confusion. He had moments where he's thinking rationally, and he had moments where he's not thinking rationally. Listen to his response, and this is somewhat, maybe you would call it, one day later, soon after he was having a gathering with his advisors and basically asking, you know, or talking about the idea of assassinating David. Yonatan makes this case, Pasuk Vav, Vayishma Shaul b'kol Yonatan. And Shaul heard the voice of Yonatan. Not just, this doesn't mean that he heard it, it means he heard it. It means he agreed with it. The argument was accepted. Vayishava Shaul chai Hashem im yumas. At this point, Shaul took an oath to God if David would be killed. Now there's an interesting halakhic point, which I didn't see anybody talk about, but what type of oath was this? If someone's innocent, then you're not allowed to kill them if they're innocent. And the Torah already told you that you're not allowed to kill them if they're innocent. So taking an oath that if David's innocent, he won't be killed, what kind of meaning is like saying, you know, I'm taking an oath that I'm going to make Kiddush this Shabbos. Well, I have to make Kiddush this Shabbos. It's not my oath that's doing that. I'm taking an oath that I'm going to put a mezuzah on my house. I mean, is that halachically, that's not necessarily considered to be an oath, because I'm already, the Gemara actually uses a phrase. Let's say you want to, the Gemara presents it in a way, let's say you want to say, you make an oath that you're not going to keep Shabbos. So that oath is not binding. You right? An oath to violate one of the negative commandments of the Torah is not binding, because the Gemara uses the expression, Mushba ma'omid mehar Sinai. You, Jewish people, you as a people enlisted yourselves in an oath to keep the Torah at Har Sinai. So you already took an oath that you're going to keep Shabbos. So you can't take an oath to violate Shabbos, because it would be canceling a pre-accepted oath. So here, when Shaul takes an oath not to kill David, on a halachic level, it sounds like I'm taking an oath not to commit innocent, you know, murder against an innocent man. So it could be that it's not necessarily a halachic binding oath, but it's a way of Shaul expressing that he's serious about not killing David. Yonatan hears those words, and perhaps most importantly, David hears those words. He is focused on this internal crisis, this internal himself. Within himself. Within himself, that's his focus. Right? He's clearly, you know, becoming this. This is his entire. Again. We're clearly not. There's not a clear path. You might have expected it to be nice and tight, that Shaul would just stop being king one day, and David would be king the next day, and everything would be fine. That wasn't the roadmap. Why? We can't necessarily know. So everyone hears that. Pasuk Zayin. Vayikra Yonatan le David. So Yonatan calls out to David. Vayagid lo Yonatan is called Advar Meila. Yonatan told him everything. Maybe saying just in case David didn't hear anything on his own, Yonatan makes it very clear. Vayave Yonatan is David El Shaul. So David, Yonatan brings David back to Shaul. Vayhila fanav kesmol shol shom. And he was before him like yesterday and the day before. Everything's back to normal. Everything is hunky dory. Now, it's a question that we asked before, what the other servants are thinking, we have no idea. I mean, they very recently sat in a meeting with the king where the king said, I want to kill this guy, and now he's back. He's back in good graces. So, unless, if we go with a theory that the people, and maybe they were, already used to the idea that Shaul has his moments of rationality and his moments of irrationality, so it makes kind of perfect. It would make sense, and they would say, "Okay, it's one of those days. The king's in one of those moods. Now he's rational." The only thing is that we're going to see that when Shaul gives a command to go after David, his servants listen. Meaning, the servants are clearly not convinced that Shaul is at a place in his life where you shouldn't listen to his commands.
So
He's still the king. So that, you know, again, we're not given a window into what the avad and what the servants were thinking. So we can have our theories, but we're not going to know for sure.
When it says "Vayu lefanav ketz
Moshe
Sham," yeah, we know that Shaul, I mean ketz Moshe Sham, he didn't like him before then. Like it says, you know, everything's nice and good now, but he didn't like him beforehand. So is he just making believe that all is good now, or is it?
Perhaps it's just meaning that David is back in the palace. He's back, you know, playing the music when the music needs to be played, being a soldier when needs to, you know, everything's back to before Shaul expressed publicly, or at least, you know, this is in front of Yonatan and his servants, that's considered to be publicly. Mm-hmm. Before he expressed publicly that he wants to kill him, it went back to whatever that was.
Right. This doesn't mean that Shaul gave up on his
not at all.
Thoughts of killing. And
not at all. Now, well, the thought of killing, though, well, we're not sure about that because the pasuk expresses where Shaul says he takes an oath that he's not going to kill him.
Right. Yeah. But.
Right. I mean, the oath does not last too long, unfortunately.
Yeah, we know what happens. So.
Correct.
I don't know. I'm gonna spoil the word.
Right.
It's distasteful to say the least. This is the order no matter what. I mean, it's like history.
Well, I'm saying I don't know what they were thinking. What's clear from the pasuk is that they're still going
to
listen.
Like they're going to listen to orders no matter what.
Which maybe means that they're not fully aware of his situation. Maybe they don't think things are so bad, and they think whatever the king says should be listened to. Pasuk ches. Vatosef hamilchama liyos, the war continued again. Vayetze David vayilachim baplishtim, David went out again and he fought against the plishtim. Vayach bohem maka gedola, and he and his men struck a blow against them, a great blow, a maka gedola. Vayonusu mipanov, and they ran away from him. So that also, this pasuk echoes that kind of things are back to normal. There's a war or a battle of the war. David goes out. David successful. Pasuk tes. Vatihi ruach Hashem ra'a el shol. And one of those spirits of Hashem of the evil type came upon Shol. V'hu bebeso yoshev. He's sitting in his house alone, or he's sitting in his house. V'chaniso biyado, his spear is in his hand. Again, we kind of highlighted how that you know, you're a little paranoid when you're sitting with when you're in a palace protected and you're sitting with a weapon in your hand. That's not a good sign. V'david menagin biyad, and David was playing by hand, meaning he was playing his harp, he was playing his music. It was one of those times where Shaul is agitated, and when Shaul is agitated, David plays. That's been happening. It's continuing to happen. Pasuk Yud, Vayivakesh Shaul lahakos bechanes bedavidu vakir, and Shaul wanted to hit David with a spear into the wall. Vayiftar mipnei Shaul, and he dodged it. Vayachas achanes bakir, and Shaul was struck the spear into the wall.
This is the same as the last chapter.
Slightly different, because this time David is aware. This time David is aware. David dodges it. But David nas, and now David runs away. He escaped that night. He escaped that night out of the grasp of the king. And by looking at, I believe it's by comparing. The chapter before, it was passive.
Now he knew he was doing it.
The chapter before, it missed him. It says vayiso, but there the language was vayisov David in Hebrew, which kind of just meant like he turned, and the Mepharshim explained that was like by accident, or at least by accident. And then here it says vayiftar, it's more of an active And the fact that, so when the two psukim are put side by side, last time David didn't run away, this time he does run away. Why do you run away when someone throws something at you? When you know someone throws something at you, run away. Last time he didn't run away, so the Mefarshim understand that he might not have been, while it sounds a little crazy, he might not have been aware that his life was in danger. Here, he realizes his life is in danger, and he runs. So it's the middle of the night, Shaul wants to kill him, David's on the run, and we'll continue next time.